Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. ESG, or Environmental, Social, Governance, promises to help the bottom line and the planet at the same time. Is it too good to be true? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of an episode digging into that very question. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Honestly, it's a great song. Even a quarter century later, the circle of life, or at least of life in Hollywood, 25 years after audiences were first introduced to The Lion King, Disney has brought Simba, Nala, Scar, and others back to the big screen. But this time, no more hand-drawn characters, and not quite live action either. The 2019 version of The Lion King is a triumph of photorealistic, computer-generated imagery. But the realism might be its greatest weakness, too, with some critics saying that while it may look like real animals are talking, and that might be super cool, the movie may lack the emotional pull of the original. Should storytelling cower as technology roars? So this hour on Point, the return of The Lion King. And you can join us. Have you seen the latest version of The Lion King? Did you find it thrilling? Or maybe disappointing. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us today first from New York is Oramide Tinubu. She's the entertainment editor at Stylecaster and a film writer who's written for Shadow and Act, The AV Club, and NBC as well. Oramide, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Meghna. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Now, I'm going to be, through the course of this hour, reflecting maybe the voice of some of disappointed critics in the new Lion King here. But what did you take? What did you make of it? I'm hearing that you loved it.
I adored the film. I thought it was so beautifully done. I thought it was nostalgic. I love the new voice characters. I love the fact that they brought James Earl Jones back to voice Mufasa after all of these years. I just thought it was a wonderful experience for all ages.
Okay. So we've got James Earl Jones. We've got Beyonce. We've got John Oliver. We just got this all-star cast of voice cast here. But let's talk a little bit more about the visual impact of this movie. Did you see it in 3D or just regular 2D?
I just saw it in regular 2D. 3D is a bit much for my eyes.
Well, we've got a comment on our Facebook page from Liz Farrington, who she says, saw it today, as epic as it was when I saw it at eight years old. She says, especially in 3D. And she loved how it followed the story exactly, and the music and the imagery was incredible. So what was the visual imagery like to you, Oramide?
I thought it was outstanding. It literally looked like we were in the Sahara looking at these beautiful animals. Like, you could see the fur sort of bristling in the wind. You could see the water droplets. It looked so realistic that I even think one critic said that he thought it was actual lions. That is not the case. It was very much CGI, but it looked so beautiful that you were right there. At some points, it was even kind of scary, even though I'm an adult, because it looked like, you know, these real lions were fighting each other. So it was better than anything I've ever seen in terms of, you know, a CGI experience of that kind. It looked like I was back in South Africa on safari.
But isn't that exactly the thing that some critics are pointing to, that that made them feel like the movie to them fell a little flat? Because it looks so realistic, and the animals' faces don't have the sort of Disney-esque animated look, right? That provides human expression to human feelings as voiced through the characters of these animals. And that was why, like, it was actually just too real.
I think that's a little silly. I think that if you look at just the Jungle Book or look at anything that Disney's done with their live actions, it's that same sort of thing. If you can't, you know, most people are animal lovers, hopefully. And if you can't relate to animals' feelings at this point, then that's I think, different from the film. I think what we should be looking at as critics is not from our adult perspectives on everything, especially when it comes to children's films, but really, like, how can children relate to things like this? How can this story really resonate with a new generation? We are sort of sitting in an age where things are very volatile, and we really want to bring in stories and things that have true messages that kids can relate to, that they can hold on to and really go back toward. So I don't think, you know, talking about, I think when, as critics, we kind of get too deep into, like, a film style and, like, theory and things like that, and that's great for our Tarantino films and our Scorsese films, but this is Disney, so let's sort of meet people where they are.
Okay, well, I just want to remind folks that our phone number is 1-800-423-8255, and call if you saw this movie with your kid. Let us know what you think, and maybe even, you know, if you're a young person yourself, call us at 800-423-8255, because, you know, we quote-unquote grown-ups who are talking right now first saw the animated feature 25 years ago. So to Aramide's point, want to know what a new generation thinks here. But Aramide, let me play a couple of scenes back-to-back from the 1994 version and the new 2019 version of The Lion King. So first of all, let's listen to what... maybe old folks like me fell in love with back in 1994. This is a scene where Pumbaa, the warthog, then voiced by Ernie Sabella, and Timon, the meerkat, then voiced by the inimitable Nathan Lane, when they first discover a young Simba. Here it is.
Jeez, it's a lion! Run, Pumbaa, move it!
Hey, Timon, it's just a little lion.
Look at him.
He's so cute and all alone. Can we keep him?
Pumbaa,
are you nuts?
You're talking about a lion. Lions eat guys like us.
But he's so little.
He's gonna get bigger.
Maybe he'll be on our side.
That's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Maybe he'll be... Hey, I've got it. What if he's on our side?
That's from the 1994 version, the original Lion King. Here's that very same scene in the 2019 film, this time with Seth Rogen as Pumbaa and Billy Eichner as Timon.
Oh, no, it's a little lion.
That is not a lion.
Well, then go check it out. What is
that? That is not a lion. It's a furry bird.
It looks like a lion.
That's not a lion. Let me get a closer look. Excuse me.
All right, let me see what we're dealing with here.
It's a lion! Run for your life, Pumbaa!
Hey, Timon, wait! It's a little lion!
It gets bigger!
Can we keep him? Can we please keep him? Okay. I promise. I'll walk him every day. If he makes a little mess, I'll clean it up.
The 2019 version of The Lion King there. Aramide, they followed the storyline from the original very, very closely.
Definitely. That's one of the things I loved about it. I think that had they changed something or if they'd gone too far off course, people literally would have rioted in the streets. We do have The Lion King 1.5 and The Lion King 2. So if people wanted that sort of sequel and things like that, that would have been a different film. But I love the fact that the film was nearly shot for shot. That's one of the things that really drew me to the story again.
All right. Well, Aramide, stand by for just a second because I want to bring in Josh Spiegel now. Into the conversation, he joins us from Tempe, Arizona. He's co-host of the Mousterpiece Cinema Podcast, a podcast about Disney movies of the past, present, and future. Josh, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Okay, so you just heard Aramide say that she loved the fact that the 2019 Lion King adheres so closely to the storyline of the 1994 original. And, you know, I hear that, but it also makes me wonder then, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? Like, why'd they mess with the original to begin with? What do you think?
Well, I mean, they messed with the original because they could make a couple $100 million at the box office this weekend, as they did. However, I guess I'm going to be adopting the some critics part today because I did not enjoy this film a lot. I think primarily because I kept watching it thinking I could just be watching the animated film that I own on Blu-ray or on my Apple TV, and it, you know, costs roughly as much to buy the movie digitally as it does to pay for a ticket. And I just felt that the photorealism, which was definitely very impressive, it's a very convincingly created series of visual effects, but I think it was completely divorced from the story, from the emotion. And even though it does follow the story almost beat for beat, sometimes line for line. It just felt like it's impossible not to compare it, as you just did by playing the two versions of Timon and Pumbaa. Although I will happily admit Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen are the best part of the film. They're very funny. I think the rest of the movie really lost the special qualities that made the 1994 film so special.
But why? I mean, this seems to be the central criticism for the thumbs down crowd on the new Lion King. Why does it, for you, did it not have the emotional resonance that the two-dimensional hand-drawn characters did a quarter century ago?
I think it's the decision to make the movie photorealistic, which kind of comes from the top down. I think it extends to the voice performances, excluding Eichner and Rogen. I think a lot of the actors either made the decision or they were directed to make the decision by Jon Favreau to be much more muted. There's a lot of line deliveries here that I kept hearing the original version in my head and thinking it sounded more lively originally. I think a good example of that is the character of Scar, who is voiced now by Chiwetel Ejiofor, voiced by Jeremy Irons in the original film. And there are clearly a lot of decisions in how Scar is characterized now that is very different from how he was in 1994. One of the big shifts, if I can get into, I guess, what is technically a spoiler because it is new to this movie, is that Scar is more interested in trying to woo Sarabi, the queen of the lionesses, you know, Mufasa's mate, to be his mate instead. That's a big shift from what happened in the original film, and that's fine. But I think that Ejiofor's performance is a lot more low-key, and I think that kind of extends to all the voice performances. There's not as much life in what's going on because, to something you mentioned earlier, these animals' faces can't have expressive emotions because lions, as terrifying as they are, don't have expressive faces. No animals do. It's something that is a deliberate choice by those hand-drawn animators that isn't something you can replicate if you're making a nature documentary, essentially.
Well, Josh Stambaugh and Aramide, I know you're probably going to want to respond to what Josh said, but we have to take a quick break. We are talking about the 2019 remake, a triumph of computer-generated imagery of The Lion King. But the question is, does it have that same emotional resonance, the same power of storytelling that the original Disney movie had a quarter century ago? And also, by the way, does Disney even care? To Josh's point, hundreds of millions of dollars in the live action or new remakes of their old classics. This is I Just Can't Wait to Be King from the new film. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken? A podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. A recent episode featured a debate about ESG or environmental social governance.
This sounds like more work than just putting your money into a social impact fund.
It's a lot more work.
Yeah.
Anybody who thinks there's an easy solution here is either engaged in puffery, greenwash, or deceiving themselves.
Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the episode.
Hakuna Matata, what a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata, ain't no passing craze.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and sorry for that tiny pause there. The music is so catchy that You start singing it in your head the minute you hear it. That is Hakuna Matata from the new version, the 2019 version of The Lion King. It's really a remarkable demonstration of how far computer-generated imagery has come, but it's that very same issue that makes a lot of critics say, this new movie might not be as good as the original Lion King from 1994, and we want to hear what you think about that. We've got comments also coming in on our website at onpointradio.org. Aaron Fountain, for example, says, this was the second Disney live-action film I've seen, and I cannot watch them anymore. I should say, technically, this one isn't live-action, but I see what Aaron's point is. Aaron says, very little is new in this adaptation of The Lion King. And I found myself bored despite loving the animated film. Well, we're joined today by Josh Spiegel. He's co-host of the Mousterpiece Cinema podcast, a podcast about Disney movies of the past, present, and future. He joins us from Tempe, Arizona. And Aramide Tinubu joins us. She is entertainment editor at Stylecaster and a film writer who's written for Shadow and Act, The AV Club, Essence, and NBC News. She joins us from New York. So Aramide, you heard Josh's criticism of the film, of the movie before. He particularly was looking at the Scar character. What do you think?
I wholly disagree with him. When I first heard that Chiwetel Ejiofor was taking over the role from Jeremy Irons as Scar, I was a little bit alarmed. I was a little taken aback because Scar is one of my favorite characters, probably in all of Disney. But what Chiwetel does is so different from Jeremy. I don't even think they could even be compared. I think he's extremely sinister. He's much more diabolical and much more terrifying, I think, than the original film, which is why I was able to separate the two of them. Though I will say, I did not like the remix of Be Prepared that we got in this 2019 version. That was probably my sole gripe from the film. It was not, I was looking forward to very much hearing that same song, but this did not do it justice at all.
Okay.
So I say I agree with him on that statement.
All right. Well, since we're talking about the two different versions of Scar, let's actually hear a little bit about how they sound. So first of all, here's a clip from the 94 version of Be Prepared, in which Scar, in this version, of course, voiced by Jeremy Irons, as we're talking about, where Scar is plotting Mufasa's overthrow with those hyenas, his co-conspirators.
So prepare for the chance of a lifetime. Be prepared for sensational news. A shining new era is tiptoeing nearer.
And where do we feature?
Just listen to teacher. I know it sounds sordid, but you'll be rewarded when at last I am given my dues. And injustice deliciously swear. Be prepared.
Jeremy Irons there in the 94 version of The Lion King. And here's that same scene with the music from 2019 and Chiwetel Ejiofor again as Scar.
Prepare for the murkiest scam. Meticulous planning, tenacity spanning, decades of denial is simply why I'll be king. Undisputed, respected, saluted, and seen for the wonder I am! Yes, my teeth and ambitions are bared. Be prepared.
Chiwetel Ejiofor as Scar in the 2019 version of The Lion King. Aramide, let me come back to you on this, because hearing it on the radio, I actually like both versions a lot as an audio experience. But the music, I mean, in the 2019 version, we have photorealistic lions singing songs. Did that not seem kind of dissonant to you?
I think perhaps it would have been had this been Disney's first live action, but because I had seen The Jungle Book, I had seen Beauty and the Beast, which isn't quite the same thing. I don't know why everyone is so alarmed. Like, I feel like this is what their sort of template has been. So to act like they're just pulling this out of their bottoms is a bit strange to me. So I went into the theater with expectations that this is, you know, they would be giving me a Jungle Book template. And I was just really excited to see what this new cast. It's a mostly black cast, which I thought was very important this time around because the animals are set in Africa. And I really enjoyed it. And I took it for what it was versus trying to dice it apart.
Okay, Josh, what do you think?
Well, first of all, the be prepared, compare and contrast we just had. I mean, it's, I guess audio is a little bit more forgiving, but I suppose I wish that Chiwetel Ejiofor had gotten to sing that song as opposed to the kind of speak singing style he's doing a la Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady. I think, to Aramide's point, I've seen all the remakes to this point as well. And I think what I wish was the case was that they simply either didn't exist or that they went completely afield from the original story. And I know that in a case like The Lion King, it's basically impossible to do that because everybody knows the film like the back of their hand. But to your question about the dissonance of photorealistic animals singing and talking, which are things that real animals don't do, it's really hard to get over. It was hard to get over for me with The Jungle Book, which I did like a little bit more. But I can't quite make the mental leap to accept that I'm watching animals walk, not dancing around the savannah this time, but walking around the savannah and singing.
I hear you. But to Aramide's point earlier, maybe we're just being old fuddy-duddies. Like if you're if you're four, like our listener on Twitter, who's calling herself Colorado Mountain Goat, says, Colorado Mountain Goat says, it was amazing. I saw it with my four-year-old and we were utterly captivated.
I can't dismiss that listener's opinion. I think, though, as a parent myself of a four-year-old, I feel like I have to be more critical of these films before I let my kid watch this, because these are movies that are going to be forming their awareness of the world as much as actual interactions are going to do. And I'd like to make sure, especially in this case, when I literally have two versions of the same movie, of the same story, which one I can choose to have him experience. Yeah. It's a pretty easy choice.
Aramide, I know you want to respond, but I just want to get to our callers here just for a little bit before they feel like I've left them out in the cold. And if anyone's out there, a young person or a parent with a young person who recently saw both versions as well, back to back, I'd love to hear what you guys think. Let's go to Tom, who's calling from Frederick, Maryland. Tom, you're on the air. What did you think of the remake of The Lion King?
Well, hello. I went yesterday with my wife and my 7 and 9-year-old, and we actually watched the animated one earlier in the day before we went. And so back to back, I mean, we really enjoyed it. I thought the CGI was one of the most incredible CGI works I've ever seen. If you're looking for a new twist, it's really not there. So it's what do you do with a classic story like that? Do you take the chance and add something new and potentially mess it up? Or do you stay with the classic story? So they stayed with the classic story, which is kind of what I expected. But, I mean, my 7 and 9-year-old loved it, and they've grown up watching the animated one. So I guess it's too early to tell which one's going to ultimately be their favorite, but they love the new one. So,
fascinating. Yeah,
And I also, I would give it a couple stars just for the Star Wars connection, because the voice of Simba, it was that Donald Glover? The guy who did the voice of Simba?
Yeah, Donald Glover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Donald Glover. So you have Donald Glover and you have James Earl Jones. So you have the Star Wars connection, to me, which is worth a couple stars right there.
So. Well, we had James Earl Jones in the original Lion King as well there. But Tom, thank you so much for your call. Okay, so Josh and Aramide, hang on here for just a minute, because we've been talking a lot about the photorealism of the CGI in this 2019 Lion King. So joining us now to explore that a little further is Charles Bromesco. He's freelance film and TV critic, writing for publications including The Guardian and Vulture. We have an excerpt of his article for the AV Club, which was headlined, "The Dead-Eyed New Lion King Painfully Illustrates the Difference Between Cinema and Video Games." And that article, that excerpt, is at onpointradio.org. Charles, welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Dead-eyed? Really?
I'm glad that mine is the only work that is going to be specifically read here on the program. No, I am in the camp that finds the lions' faces to be less emotive than in the original one. I was first worried when I saw a tweet on Twitter that was a side-by-side comparison of footage from the first movie with a preview from the new one. I think it was the Hakuna Matata scene. Mm-hmm. And you see, you know, Simba's design as a kid, he has a sort of playfulness about him. He looks like a kid. And then as a young adult lion, I suppose you would say. He has a sort of playfulness about him. He definitely looks mature. I mean, it's a very clearly crafted character. And when you look at the Simba of today, it's a lion. You know, you're looking at a lion and he looks like all of the other lions. The design for Scar, you know, they make him a little skinnier and mangier to show that he's, you know, dangerous. But they all just look like lions. And so when I say dead-eyed, I suppose not to say that animals have dead eyes. I love animals as much as anyone else. But I don't see the expressiveness. I don't see the sort of awareness of personhood that you see in the earlier Disney movies.
Yeah. So this is actually one of the most important, most interesting things to me about the debate over this new film here, because it in my mind, it raises sort of what is it that we go to the movies for? What is it that we go to see Disney animated features for? And so here's a little bit about how the director of the 2019 Lion King version, Jon Favreau, how he responds to this question. And he, in this clip, you're going to hear him talk about photorealism and photorealistic animation in his version of The Lion King.
Part of why it looks so photoreal is because we don't have the animals doing things they wouldn't do. So I was limiting the animators who were creating these performances from their voices to only allow the animals to do what they would do if experiencing an emotion. So, for example, a cat doesn't use their eyebrows or their eyes at all for emotion. It's all in their body language. And so if Donald would have a look of shock on his face, the animators would have to do research and see how a cat would express that same type of emotional beat.
That's Jon Favreau, director of the 2019 version of The Lion King. So, Charles, how do you respond to that? Because that last part of what Favreau said, that the animators were registering emotions like shock or surprise or happiness in terms of how an animal would actually behave, right, in the 2019 version. But I always thought the greatest power of Disney's animated classics was that they allow us to access, as kids, complicated human stories, complicated human emotions through recognizable reactions in drawn figures, right? And that's not exactly what Favreau says he's trying to get at here.
No, yeah, I agree 100%. I love that clip from Favreau because he's really clearly articulating the problem with the film. The animators come to him and they say, if we want to convey shock in Simba, I think of specifically, I'm sure that this conversation revolved around the reaction shot to Mufasa's death, which is, I think, the most important moment in the whole film. After Simba sees his lion father fall to his death, you know, we get the cut back to him that zooms out from his eye and he just, you know, is gripped with horror. It's a very powerful moment. And so the animators say, you know, we have to raise his eyebrows to convey that. And Jon Favreau says, because lions can't raise their eyebrows, you got to figure out something else. And then they did not figure out something else. He just said, figure it out, another way to do it. And apart from expressing facial emotion, there is no way to do that. And so I don't know why he would pen himself in like that. When you have the powers of, you know, the sophistication of this technology to do absolutely anything, why would you limit yourself to just stuff that we can see on Discovery Channel?
Mm. Well, Aramide, I know you don't feel that way, that you felt a deep emotional resonance when you watched the film.
I think it's just my history with the mm-hmm. film in general, which I think so many people, especially millennials, have. We watched the original film for the first time in theaters. For a lot of us, it was our first film that we were able to see. And I just knowing the story, I think that's why the film still resonated with me so well. And I am also curious to know, like, what it will look like to see these really emotive expressions on these CGI animals. It might be kind of horrifying in a way that we might not be expecting. But to go back to what that gentleman was saying about his kids loving it, I think we have to consider this new generation of kids who literally live with screens in front of their faces. And to them, like, I'm sure the original Lion King, though it's a fun story, it looks probably very dull in many ways. It doesn't look as sort of spectacular as many of the films that come out now. Like, it's not an Inside Out or even a Toy Story 4. So what they want more of an experience when it comes to animation and visual things. We weren't that generation. We weren't the kids to be in screens all day, every day. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably why they can connect with it a bit more than perhaps some of us can.
Josh, what do you think?
Well, I don't know how old the rest of us are. I mean, I saw this movie, the original film, when I was 9. So, I mean, I grew up with it like a lot of folks did. And I at least would say that movies such as the original Lion King have a really impressive, epic, spectacular feel to them, even if they don't look photorealistic. And I think to what Jon Favreau was saying, I push back against the idea of we're only having the animals do things that real animals do, because, again, they don't really talk. They don't really sing. And in one case, I don't know how movie characters like these ones could see other Disney animated films. There is one moment in this film that I won't go into too great detail of where they reference another Disney animated film pretty directly. And I was spending more time than was probably normal thinking, how did they get to the movie theater in the savannah to watch another movie and reference that? That's something animals don't do. So I think I take issue with that too. It's if you want to do photorealism, fine, but don't make it seem like you're actually sticking to what real animals do, because if you were, this would be a silent film.
Okay, so Charles, let me just jump back to you here on this. I'm not quite sure sort of where I fall on this, but in reacting to what Josh just said, I get what he's saying, but on the other hand, isn't it also like just a really adult perspective on what is possible in the movies? And I just wonder if that distinction doesn't matter to young people. It doesn't matter to kids. Their imaginations are much, much more fluid, and they don't care if like the animals are talking in one scene but they're not reacting with human like visual facial emotions in another scene. Like the fluidity of what's possible to them isn't as strict as what may be possible for adults. What do you think? We just got a couple seconds before a break.
Yeah, no, if we're willing to go from anecdotal evidence here, when they had the big media screening here in New York for the critics, a colleague of mine brought his 5-year-old, and after about 15 minutes of the movie, I love this story, the kid turns to him and says, "What are we doing here? I thought you said this was going to be a new Lion King." I feel like okay. When I was a child, my imagination was always stimulated much more actively by expressionistic art, you know, stuff that jumped out at me, stuff with bright, vibrant colors. I would not have watched Planet Earth as a child, even though that leaves my imagination more room to do work. I don't understand that reasoning. Right. I feel like kids love cartoons. It ain't rocket science.
Well, Charles, Ramide, and Josh, stand by here for a second. We're going to take a break with "Can You Feel the Love Tonight?" sung by Beyonce and Donald Glover. This is On Point. The love tonight, the peace the evening brings, the world for once in perfect harmony with all its living things.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
Hi, On Point listeners. I'm poet and author Shinyi Pai. As you celebrate Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, I invite you to listen to the 10,000 Things podcast from KUOW and the NPR Network. 10,000 Things is a podcast about modern artifacts of Asian American life, ordinary objects that tell extraordinary stories and reveal something profound about the experience of being Asian in America. Find 10,000 Things from KUOW and the NPR Network, wherever you get your podcasts.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the quiet jungle, the lion sleeps tonight.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. That's Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen in the 2019 version of The Lion Sleeps Tonight from Disney's remake of The Lion King. And we want to know what you make of the remake of The Lion King, whether you think Disney was right to do this as they march on with a lot of their reboots of their classic animated films, or if this seems to you an exercise in the mouse exercising its muscle at the box office. I'm joined today by Charles Bromesco. He's a freelance film and TV critic. He's written for outlets like The Guardian and Vulture and the AV Club as well. Aramide Tinubu joins us. She's entertainment editor at Stylecaster. And Josh Spiegel is with us. He's co-host of the Mousterpiece Cinema podcast. And let's go to Elaine, who's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Elaine, you're on the air.
Hi there, Magna. Thanks for having me.
No problem. What'd you think of the new film?
Well, I certainly don't want to sound pedestrian, but there's something to be said for nostalgia. Seeing this 25 years ago and having, as Josh pointed out, an incredible formative experience watching these Disney films, watching it in 2019 with a lifetime's worth of perspective, I laughed, I cried, and certainly the child-filled theater that I was in, they certainly didn't seem to give two hoots about the photorealism. They were in it for the laughs and also in it for the spectacular beauty that the movie really put on full display. And in a time where we're begging people to care about this precious resource we have on Earth, I was certainly thrilled to see some of the beautiful imagery that coupled with this one of the themes in the movie, which is the circle of life and caring for our impacts on this globe.
Wow. Well, Elaine, thank you so much for your call. Charles, do you want to respond to what Elaine said?
Yeah, no, I think that that's a lovely sentiment, definitely. I understand the value of sharing in cinema with kids. Bringing your children to the movies is a huge part of – that was a huge part of my childhood, definitely. But with regard to the idea of, you know, being able to share in The Lion King with your kid, the 1994 Lion King hasn't gone anywhere. This is, to me, the only difference between sharing in The Lion King on video now and sharing on The Lion King by going to the new one is that Disney gets paid again with one of them and doesn't with the other. I don't want to rain on any kids' parades, and I'm sure that when I have some of my own, I'll bring them to all sorts of movies that I have, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. very hoity-toity artistic objections to. But I just think that I try to be conscious of what studios think they can get away with just because we won't, you know, hold them to any higher standard.
Okay. So we should talk about the financial benefit that Disney gets from remaking its classic animated films here, because I'm seeing that The Lion King, this is from The Hollywood Reporter just today, opened to a record-breaking $185 million domestically, early global totals of $531 million. Its remake of Aladdin is bumping up against $1 billion globally, okay? Disney now has five months left to go in 2019, and the company is days away from eclipsing an industry record set in 2016. And in 2016, they collected $7.6 billion for the full year, but Disney's 2019 revenue could be $10 billion because six of their films are likely to break the $1 billion mark. So, Aramide, I mean, is that really what this is all about, that this is a pretty straightforward way for Disney's shareholders to be making a ton of money?
Definitely. I think Hollywood right now is all about the bucks. And to be honest, things aren't really stacking up for them. So they've gone back to nostalgia. But if you look at films like, you know, Men in Black, those sort of remakes didn't do as well because they're not sort of reimagining or they're not super nostalgic. And, you know, they don't have the sort of lead actor that sort of propelled that franchise forward. So I think it is a lot about the bucks for Disney, but I also have to think about what type of time are we in. We're looking at a very divisive country. People are trying to, you know, protect their children from a lot of things that are going on in the world, and you're going to go to something that's comforting. You're going to go towards something that you know, like the back of your hand, like The Lion King, like Aladdin. So you have to consider, I think, the global landscape of cinema right now, of our world, of our government. No one is going to bring their kids into anything that feels too jolting because they're dealing with jolting things when you walk out of your door, when you turn on the news. So I think, to be honest, like, you know, Disney is a business and they're king right now at their business. And we can't, you know, I can't sort of say anything bad about that.
I mean, Josh, it seems like Disney essentially is Hollywood.
It certainly feels that way. And to Aramide's point, Disney is a business. So I would say, yes, they're doing this kind of thing because they can make lots and lots of money off of it. I will point out, though, that while they're certainly going to be the king of the box office this year, The one problem with remaking movies like Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast and The Lion King now is that they can't do it again in 2 years, because the remakes of theirs that have hit the biggest are remakes of films that were made when we were kids, or when I was a kid at least. And I think, you know, they're already in production on a Little Mermaid remake, and I'm sure that that will also make lots and lots of money. But then what are they going to do? Because they've kind of remade all of the biggest possible titles that will make a lot of money. They made another film this year, the Dumbo
I was just going to say the Dumbo movie. That's right.
Which was a film that was with The Lion King outgrossed Dumbo, I think, midday Saturday. That's how quickly The Lion King managed to pass Dumbo, which was arguably kind of a flop. And that's not because the movie was terrible. It's not because the original Dumbo isn't wonderful. It's because people don't have that same nostalgic link to that film. And there aren't that many more Disney animated classics that have the same buildup of nostalgia. So I'm sure Robert Iger is swimming in all sorts of money right now, like he's Scrooge McDuck. But in a couple years... In a couple years' time, you know, they might be starting to scratch their heads and saying, do we do a Brother Bear remake? Do we do
Fantasia. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, they've remade Fantasia twice. They did The Sorcerer's Apprentice a decade ago with Nicolas Cage, a film that I'm sure we all saw and loved and adored.
Apparently not.
And they also – I know. Neither did I. And last fall, they did The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, which was in part inspired by the Nutcracker suite sequence in the original film, and that was – like The Sorcerer's Apprentice, a huge flop at the box office.
They want to do a film about the Night on Bald Mountain sequence. They're doing another Fantasia live-action picture.
Okay. Yep. Wow. Okay, so they're relying on us, like, cynical Gen Xers, really, to help them in the box office. I don't think that's a great business strategy in the long run. But let's go back to our callers. Robert is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I loved the 2019 version of Lion King. That movie is a legend. It was a legend, and it shall be a legend. Just to see Africa in her beauty and all her splendor, and to conjure up my best Mufasa voice, I'll say to the audience, remember.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for your call. You know, Robert, no one less than Beyonce actually agrees with you, Robert, because, of course, Beyonce played Nala in the film. She also produced several songs for the film's soundtrack. And recently on Good Morning America, Beyonce really talked a little bit about how she expanded her use of African cultural materials and musicians and sounds in the soundtrack.
Soundtrack is a love letter to Africa, and I wanted to make sure we found the best talent from Africa and not just, you know, use some of the sounds and did my interpretation of it. I wanted it to be authentic to what is beautiful about the music in Africa.
That's Beyonce on Good Morning America. Aramide, respond to this, because you had mentioned earlier also that we should take time to appreciate that the cast is more diverse in this version of The Lion King. And why is that important?
Definitely. I think, you know, when I saw this, the original film, I was, I think, in kindergarten when it first came out. And, you know, I spent my childhood looking at white people on TV and in films. I'm not a white person. So that, you know, I was always able to relate in things of that nature. But if you're looking at, you know, the 21st century, we want to do better for the children of this generation. We want to show them more diversity and what the world looks like as a whole, which is why I think, you know, Halle Bailey's character casting in The Little Mermaid is so important as well. And that's going to be a very diverse and inclusive film. So getting actors, mostly actors from the African diaspora, to voice these characters who live in Africa is so important. And obviously you have Billy Eichner and you have Seth Rogen as well. So it's not an all-black cast, but giving people of color the opportunity to be included in films that we spend so much money going to see and supporting is vital. Mm-hmm. And I think Disney, especially with Disney streaming and things of that nature, are really sort of at the forefront, you know, whether they've been berated into doing it or they're doing it on their own accord, is, you know, it's happening. So that's what's important. And they are one of the studios at the forefront of this who are saying, okay, we're trying to make sure that when you take little kids to these films, that they're seeing themselves represented. They're seeing kids in their classroom represented, because I think that if we continue moving in that direction, we won't have some of the issues that we're still dealing with today as we move forward.
And Josh, what about the character of Nala herself, right? She has a little more agency in this version of than she did in the 94 film.
She has a little bit more. Part of that, of course, you know, Beyonce is an incredible performer, and I was certainly glad to hear her singing part of Can You Feel the Love Tonight and that new song Spirit, which I think we heard part of a clip of in the Good Morning America snippet there. But there's only a little bit more agency that she gets in the one scene that I believe is new for the film, where you basically see her escape the pride so that she can look for help and eventually find Simba. But I think even there, the movie is kind of trapped by the decision not only to be photorealistic, but to say it's going to be the same story. Because Nala isn't in a lot of the original film, and the adult version of Nala is in even less of the original film. Mm. I would say Beyonce maybe has 10 minutes of screen time in this, and that's because that's how much of the movie Nala is in. So I was glad to hear her voice, and it was, you know, nice to see the character given a little bit more power. But it really only feels like a little bit more, because to the point that I know some of the callers have mentioned, this doesn't really diverge from the original too much. It's a conscious decision to say this is going to be the same story, which means you're going to see the same film with all of its imperfections. I really like the original film, but it's not perfect. And this movie kind of follows it beat for beat,
all right,
for good and bad.
Well, let's see if I can sneak in at least one more, maybe in more than one call here. Sasha is calling from Holly, Michigan. Sasha, you're on the air.
Hi. I love my movies. I see so many during the year, and I love the original Lion King, but the new Lion King, lovely also. Totally, you know, not totally, but somewhat different, because they have to trick it up for today's audience. And I get that, and everyone's just reading too much in it. Go, enjoy it. Take it for what it is. Take your children. Show them the original. Go see it. I don't understand what all this diversity and all this stuff is all about. And I think Beyonce didn't do that great a job. She sounded like she was recording in a sound studio. All the other actors were very good on film.
But you still like the movie?
Oh, love it. You kidding? It's funny. Everyone needs to take a deep breath. Like Mary Poppins. Sure, Disney throws some old stuff into their remakes. It's no big deal. Go and enjoy it. See it for what it is.
Sasha, are you accusing us of overthinking things on public radio? Come on.
Just for some of your movies. Everyone overthinks diversity, this, that, the other. It's talent. People who have talent need to get in and express that talent. I don't care what race you are. Just enjoy the movie and love it.
All right, let's go to one more caller here. Sasha, thank you for that call. Shola's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. Shola, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to mention that the movie was really, really amazing to hear, but it was a lot more difficult to watch because it was like watching a nature documentary with singing and dancing lions. Like I believe one of the commentators said before, it's a lot harder to watch when it's photorealistic. And I believe the production was beautiful. The animation was great. I just don't think it was right for this kind of movie.
Yeah. Well, Shola, thank you so much for your call. So Charles, that gets us back to your point here that you made when we first brought you into the conversation. It does make me wonder if one of the things that Disney is doing here is saying, look what we can do now with CGI. And if you don't like talking animals, wait till you see what we can do with human figures and computer-generated characters.
That's the final frontier. I mean, making a lifelike, realistic humanoid figure is really, really, really hard. There's this concept called the Uncanny Valley, which is this idea that as animated depictions of human figures get too close to being realistic, they become very, very creepy and alienating and very inhuman. And then you know, the actual human face is normal again. And so that is still kind of the holy grail of animation. We think back to, like, Tom Hanks and the Polar Express, creepy-looking stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That is not fit for children, not fit for my children.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, if Disney really wanted to prove their absolute prowess as a technical powerhouse, that would be the way to do it. But again, all of these things really only have import or meaning or value if they're paired with a creative vision that puts them to good use.
Mm. You know, I'm thinking that we're talking about all the remakes that Disney's doing, but particularly through its acquisition several years ago of Pixar, they are completely capable of making new animated films that are fresh and original and terrific movies here. But we've just got about 30 seconds left to go, so super quick question to you, Aramide and Josh. If there's another Disney remake that you'd like to see, what would it be? Aramide?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I will say that I'm definitely excited for Mulan, though the fact that there's not going to be that music is a little bit disheartening. But I feel like it's super feminist and cool. Maybe actually Brave. Brave might be a really cool live action.
And Josh, what do you think?
I would say Mulan precisely because it's not going to be using the music. I love the music in the animated film. But I want to see a different story with the same premise, so I'm excited for that one.
Well, Josh Spiegel, co-host of the Mousterpiece Cinema podcast, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Aramide Tinubu, entertainment editor at Stylecaster. It's always great to have you, Aramide. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And Charles Bromesco, freelance film and TV critic who recently wrote for the AV Club. We have a link to his article at onpointradio.org. Charles, thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
We're going to go out with Beyonce singing Spirit from the new Lion King. I'm Meghna Chakraborty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from BU Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes.
Can Profit Motive Save the Planet? Is a company that takes the climate into account a better investment? How about one that pays workers a living wage and champions transparency and board diversity? That's the idea of ESG, or Environmental Social Governance.
Sounds like a wonderful story. You can make more money, you can save the planet at the same time. Almost no one is going to turn that down.
It's a story that Andy King of Questrom and Veet Henish of the Wharton School challenged during a recent event at Questrom. Professor King played the critic, who says these are problems for regulation to solve, not markets.
As a famous economist said to me, you can't fix externalities with the profit motive, because the profit motive is not linked to externalities. Externalities are the byproduct of pursuing profits. So you can't fix them by getting people to even look harder at profits.
Meanwhile, Veet emphasized that ESG can be an important part of the solution.
Regulation matters, and we need better regulation. And we need to reallocate trillions of dollars of capital over time to the climate transition alone, forgetting social justice, racial justice, and other ESG issues. We're going to need the profit motive for that. No government regulation is going to reallocate tens of trillions of dollars of capital alone. It's going to be investors who are looking at current government regulation and future government regulation and trying to connect the dots.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.